All right, welcome to the Free Stretch, Week 7 edition here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, coming to you live on a Friday morning from the back porch, doing a little outdoor edition. It's such a nice morning, and I did partially start the show yesterday and ended up having to restart and do it today because of the news that came down about the game being moved. I did this whole thing about Sunday Night Football, and you know, it's been a while since the Bucks have been on it, and the Bucks don't tend to be on it very often, but it's always fun, the prime time, the lights and all that. So obviously none of that's happening now, at least not this week, out in Las Vegas, because the Buccaneers have had their game moved, and not necessarily drastic fashion, but it has been moved up to 4:05 on Sunday as of right now. And I'm recording this again early on Friday morning. By the time you listen to it, it could have changed. I hope it doesn't. As far as what we know, the latest round of tests for the Raiders all came back negative, so far so good, but they're not out of the woods yet. We'll talk more about that on the show today. We're also going to talk about the win and the win against Green Bay last weekend, which was one of the single best efforts, first of all, for the Bucs in many years. I would have to even think back to the last time they had just a complete game like that. And in the NFL this year, amongst all teams, it literally was, at least by the metrics, mathematically, the single best game any team has played so far in 2020. We'll talk about that as well. So if you want to get a hold of me, you know I always love hearing from you guys. I've been getting emails from everybody going back and forth. It's fun. Email me, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. That's B-O-B-B-Y-G-A-M-E-D-A-Y at yahoo.com. Same thing on Twitter, at Bobby Game Day. The Free Stretch, like it always is, brought to you by our good friends at Bill Curry Ford. They are a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway, and you can always go see them there. Huge showroom, huge lot, social distancing, not a problem. Now, if you want to go online, great website, BillCurryFord.com. It's spelled C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. You can check out all the inventory there. They will bring you a car to your house or apartment or office or wherever you want. If you want to test drive it without leaving, fine. And if you buy one, same thing. They'll deliver it right to your door. No matter how you buy the car, new, used, pre-owned, whatever, unlimited nationwide lifetime warranty. You have problems with the car at any point down the road, you bring it back to the service center, you're covered under the warranty, and that alone, that peace of mind, is worth it beyond what kind of a great vehicle you can get. And they've got plenty to choose from of all different kinds, makes, models, and shapes. So again, check them out, BillCurryFord.com, or go see them on Dale Mabry there north of the stadium, just over the Hillsborough overpass there, a little bit north of that right there. They've been there for 60 years now, serving the Tampa Bay area. So thanks to them, thanks to the Joes for having me on here. It's a good Friday to be a Bucks fan. And before we get into the whole thing with the game on Sunday, now Sunday afternoon, because again, that's been changing kind of a little bit by the hour sometimes. But as of right now, we're still good to go. But I want to talk just a little bit about the Bucks-Packers game. I know it was several days ago now. I know we're looking ahead. But we can't just gloss over it because that effort, and specifically that defensive effort. And I talked to you last week about how you had Aaron Rodgers coming in, hadn't thrown a pick, barely ever gets sacked. I only had three pick sixes in his entire career and almost had two in one game there against the Bucks, and how there were a lot of obstacles to overcome. Now, what I've learned more than anything watching the NFL over the years, and I guess even specifically trying to bet on the NFL, and I stress the trying to part, it's really so much about situations in the NFL. And the Bucks, we talked about it. If you listened to this show last week, we talked about how they were set up to have a really good effort on Sunday. Because whatever, you know, the NFL is all about regression to the mean. Whatever it feels like is going one way, good or bad, it's probably going to rebound a little bit the other way the next week. And that game in Chicago was so dreadful, and they left so much on the table there. And I'm not saying that they couldn't have beaten Green Bay without losing to Chicago, but that game in Chicago set them up to have a really good Sunday. And it happened. And if you look at the numbers, you know, that was a situation where the Bucks were coming in off a game they should have won but didn't. They had a little extra rest. Now, Green Bay was off of a full bye. But Green Bay had been kind of been playing above their head while the Bucks had kind of been playing below where they were supposed to be. So both teams kind of came back to the middle and then some, and the Bucks dominated the game. And it didn't feel that way at first. I mean, in the first quarter, it was 10-0. The Bucks offense had run three plays, And I had already sent out one snarky tweet about Bruce Arians not going for it on a 4th-and-1 and running up the middle on 3rd-and-1 when there was a wide open left side. It wasn't the play call that was the problem, but Ronald Jones missed a wide open left side. Or excuse me, McCoy. And they didn't get the first down. Couldn't get a yard in two plays. Ended up punting. Those were like the only three plays the Bucs ran the entire first quarter. Meanwhile, Green Bay went right down the field on the first drive, stalled, but kicked a field goal. Went right down the field on the second drive, scored. It was 10-0. Felt like a bad deal. Felt like everything I said on the week prior show wasn't going to happen. But football games, like I always tell you guys, football games are long and lots of things happen in them. And over the course of 3 hours, the Bucs not only came back and erased a 10-0 deficit, but scored 38 unanswered points and just absolutely kicked Green Bay's ass up one side and down the other. And it felt good. Like, it felt good and it looked good. Like, the pewter pants looked phenomenal. Let's all agree, because this isn't a matter of opinion. You're wrong if you don't agree with this. Let's all agree that the pewter pants should always be worn. And none of this white pants. The white on white is so just non-distinct. They finally broke out the pewter pants, even though they said they weren't going to. Looked phenomenal out there. Now, I'm not saying that's why they won the game, but it was another thing. You had the late afternoon kickoff. You had the Bucs in their rightful, glorious uniforms. You had a classic opponent in Green Bay. The sun setting. They showed a couple shots on Fox late in the game with the sun setting in the background. The lights were on. It felt like the old days, didn't it? Like, it felt right. But for the lack of a full crowd, it was almost perfect. And, you know, Buck football over the last 10 years, or actually more than that, has just kind of felt like a forgotten decade. Like, nothing felt distinct. Nothing felt memorable. There was the awful uniforms. There was the awful play. And just everything just kind of blends together. I have so few memories. You know, I've been a Bucs fan for my whole life. I'm 40. And every distinct decade, even ones where they didn't win so much, like I remember things from the 80s because that was a formidable time when I was young. The 90s were the most formidable time. I remember tons about that. And 2000 to 2010, again, I got some memory, but 2010 to 2020 up until this year, the least memorable, and it's the most recent, it should be the easiest to recall, I remember almost nothing. I really don't. I mean, it all blends together. I have to look stuff up. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, life, not just, I mean, when you're a kid, you remember more. But my point is, Sunday, watching that Green Bay game, it felt big again. Like, it felt big, and it felt right. You know, Joe Buck and Aikman on the call. I almost thought I saw Warren Sapp and Derek Brooks and Rondi Barber and John Lynch out there. And maybe I'm seeing a modern-day Vera. I'm not going to go that far yet. The Bucs aren't there. But this defense continues to be absolutely dominant. And, you know, they're young. They haven't done it yet. You know, it's one thing to put up some nice metrics and be number one in DVOA, you know, six games into the season. And the Bucs defense is. And the Bucs as a team are. We'll talk more about that. It's another thing when you've got multiple division titles and a Super Bowl and all the things that other defense did over the course of many, many years under both Tony Dungy and then John Gruden. So this defense hasn't done that yet. But, you know, even a year ago this time, they hadn't played very well in the first few games of the year, and it still felt like the Buck defense from, like, again, the past, like, 5 years getting roasted, and they started to get better and better over the season. I questioned how much of it was simply playing easier opponents toward the end of last season when they showed all this improvement. I talked about on this show in the offseason and leading up to the beginning of this year how, well, let's see if the defense really is good or if they got better because they played Jacksonville and the Lions and a few other teams at the end of last season. You'd expect them to get better against. But that wasn't any schluck, you know. That wasn't some schmuck offense. Okay, that was the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers and a team that's been dominating and undefeated before that game on Sunday. And the Bucs absolutely own them, and it was really nice to see. Thinking of some other things about that. Oh, Tristan Wirfs continued to look good. And the reason I just specifically, it's not just Wirfs. Ali Marpet's playing really well. The offensive line did a good job. Donovan Smith, you know, lots of positives there. Rob Gronkowski got his first touchdown as a Buccaneer. But the reason I mentioned Wirfs specifically, it's Friday morning, so I was watching Thursday Night Football last night. And watching Andrew Thomas for the Giants And not that he was terrible specifically last night, but just in general, he's had issues this season. He was hurt at first, and he hasn't played very well, hasn't looked good in practice. I was doing some searching on him on Twitter. And he's the fourth overall pick, and the Giants are already concerned about him. And it just made me think about how fortunate we were. I mean, Tristan Wirfs was the fourth tackle taken. You remember the draft and all those shows we did leading up to the draft and how, oh my God, will any of those four be around when the Bucs finally pick? We don't even care which one it is. We just need one of them, you know? And Wirfs, I think if the Bucs had picked fourth overall and had the first team, basically the first pick of a team that needed a tackle, I think the Bucs still probably would have taken Wirfs, I have a feeling. But for whatever reason, he was the fourth tackle taken and just absolutely fell to us from the heavens. I mean, let's be honest. A lot of this stuff is about draft acumen, and a lot of it is about luck. And Jason Light has had a healthy dose of both, to his credit, over the past several years after coming up empty-handed in some of the early drafts in his tenure. But, I mean, we're sitting there just hoping any of these guys, we don't even get to pick which one it is. We're just hoping one of them is there, and it happens to be Wirfs, and the guy is an out-and-out stud. I mean, he is absolutely a stud. Like, I don't want to go too far too soon and, like, jinx anything. Not that I believe in jinxes, but it looks like we're sitting on a powder keg with him. And that could have just as easily have been any of those guys. I mean, like I said, I was surprised Andrew Thomas was the first one. I think if we'd picked higher, I think we would have taken Wirfs anyway. But, man, did that work out well for the Bucs. So, it just all around, great effort. Like I said, if you're into the advanced numbers, DVOA, which is basically an all-encompassing statistic to rate teams. You know, obviously we can all look at win-loss records, but we want to know more. How good is a team actually playing? Is their record a mirage? Should they not be as good as their record indicates, or the opposite? Are they going to start playing better? Well, the Bucs right now, with that win over Green Bay, which as I told you before, is the highest-rated single game by the DVOA metric of any game, not just any Bucs game, any game this year in the NFL. Bucs are number one in DVOA. Not only are they number one, they are over 10% better than the number two team, Baltimore, who actually saw an increase in theirs last week, too, and the Bucs are still... The Bucs, folks, and I'm not trying to go too far here. I'm just telling you things that are just mathematical facts right now. The Bucs, okay, are one of only... I'm looking at this list here. 13 teams... Oh, excuse me, 11 teams... Tampa Bay, I'm reading this now, is the 11th team since 1985 to have a DVOA lead over 10% at this point in the season. I encourage you, if you're not sure what I'm talking about with DVOA, Google it. It's on Football Outsiders. Trust me, just go take a quick look at it. Anyway, if you look at the list of teams, this team has the 1985 Bears on it. Okay, lost one game, won the Super Bowl. The 91 Redskins that were crushing everybody with Mark Rippon and company. Super Bowl. The Cowboys of the early 90s. Super Bowl. 96 Green Bay is on this list. 98 Denver is on this list. 99 St. Louis Rams is on this list. Super Bowl. Super Bowl. Super Bowl. 2007 Patriots are on this list. Undefeated until the Super Bowl, lost in the Super Bowl. The Broncos that won the Super Bowl of the Panthers a few years back are on this list. And the Bucs are on this list of being that far ahead of not just the rest of the league, but the next best team, number two. Okay, and I don't know how, I still don't think the Bucs are that good, so I'm not trying to just pump sunshine here. I'm just telling you this is a mathematical thing that is real, and if you want to go, actually I will post the link on my Twitter account. If you go to Bobby Game Day on Twitter, at Bobby Game Day, check it out. But this is by Aaron Schatz. He says, Tampa Bay climbs back into the number one spot in our DVOA ratings this week by a hefty amount, over 10 percentage points higher than Baltimore. The DVOA rating for the season shot up thanks to a massive blowout win over previously number six Green Bay. He says a huge win combined with a positive opponent adjustment, because it doesn't just rate how you're playing, it rates the quality of your opposition. So that was an outstanding effort against outstanding opposition. And he says that effort gives Tampa Bay's win the best rating of any single game this year at 97.7%. And on, you can read all about it. I'll post the link. Point being... All right, what did I just tell you a little while ago? Things go up, things go back down, things yo-yo a little bit. You know, the Bucs aren't going to go 14-2 here and just crush the league going forward, I don't think. But there are reasons to be excited. They go into this Raiders game this week healthy. as far as the injuries. Carlton Davis has a little bit of a knee thing. He was limited yesterday. I'm doing this show before Friday's practice, so I don't have a Friday injury report for you. Safety Andrew Adams did not practice yesterday. Leonard Fournette was out there, full go. So was defensive lineman Khalil Davis. They both practiced. So, obviously, the Raiders are dealing with not just the COVID thing. They have a few more issues, too. But as far as the COVID thing, let's talk about this for a minute, because by the time you listen to this game, it's possible there is a change in the schedule. I hope not, and the news we got just a little while ago as far as no more positive tests is encouraging. So first of all, people are asking, why do they move a game up? I heard a lot of sarcasm on Twitter from people right away, and I think since then people pretty much have an idea of why, but saying, well, how does moving a game up 4 hours help with COVID if the Raiders are dealing with COVID? First of all, they had one guy, okay, their right tackle, Trent Brown, test positive with COVID. So he had to go home and all that stuff. But you know how we talked about this, how football is. It's position groups. One guy getting COVID doesn't necessarily submarine an entire team, but you can submarine an entire team just by submarining one position. What if everybody on the team is fine except all eight linemen have to quarantine? Like, you can't just not have a whole position, right? So that was a problem when Trent Brown came down with it. The entire offensive line had to be sent home, all that stuff, because they're in meeting rooms and all those things. So why move the game up? Well, this is a primetime game, Sunday Night Football on NBC, and these networks pay a lot of money for these games. You can't take a risk that you'll eventually have to move the game, which they still could, of a primetime game, and then NBC's sitting there and they got nothing. Like, oh, no, never mind. No Sunday night game this week, everybody. So you cover that by putting another game on Sunday night and just get that out of the way. And now you put the Bucs game in the late slot. If they still have to move the game, that's not as big of a deal. There are other 4 o'clock games, and everybody on the TV network still has inventory to put on TV. But you can't have a Sunday night game at the last minute where, oh, well, can't play it. Oh, well, NBC, sorry about that. Just lost a week. You can run reruns of something. No, that doesn't, you know, they have to have a game. So they go to Seattle, Arizona, which works on a couple levels because, one, that was a game that was supposed to be on Fox. They can put that on NBC. We go on Fox as the road team being an NFC team. Two, you know, they had these Sunday night games, they don't just show up the day before the game. They're there all week. And so all the production people, all the semi-trucks and everything, people said, oh, what about Steelers-Titans? Why aren't they flexed to that game? That's a really big game, and that would be a good one. But Seattle and Arizona is also a good one, with Seattle being undefeated and Arizona's 4-2. Plus, the game's in Phoenix, which is like an hour and a half or 2 hours, whatever it is. It's more than that. I think it's 3. I've made that drive before. And you go over Hoover Dam and everything. But the point is, that's right there. Like, they can move their stuff from Las Vegas to Phoenix a lot more easily than moving it cross-country on a, you know, few hours' notice. So it makes sense on a lot of levels. So fine, you get Seattle at Arizona on Sunday night. We move to Sunday at 4, assuming it holds. It's disappointing. Sunday night football is awesome. It's a little bit more soothing to know that this isn't our, like, some years it's you get this one national game and you look forward to it all year. This is the first of 3 games in a row the Bucs are going to play in primetime. They play on Monday night next week, and they play on Sunday night again the week after that at home against the Saints. So, okay, we still have those, no big deal. But still, it's always disappointing. I was probably going to get my friends together, and maybe I still will. But I was probably going to try and have my friends and set the TV up outside. And I was going to get 2 TVs going because the game was going to go right up against the Rays game and would have had to go back and forth. That's not going to be a problem now. And again, we'll wait and see if the game is at 4:05 on Sunday. It could still be moved. Again, if they need to, they can move it to Monday or even Tuesday. Remember, we're getting, you know, later in the year now. In the earlier weeks of the year, like when the Titans had their outbreak, there was a lot of flexibility in the schedule, and they were able to move some things around. Now, every week that goes by, bye weeks keep getting eaten up. The Raiders had their bye week last week. So we're at the point now where if the Bucs and Raiders don't play on Sunday, we are adding a Week 18 to the season, which the NFL has not had to do yet and doesn't want to do. They can. They're totally prepared for that. But up until now, it's been, oh, well, we'll move this bye week and you guys play here and now we'll have a Tuesday at 5 o'clock in the afternoon game or whatever we got to do. And they did it. The Titans are clean now. They're back to full go. They have no COVID issues. And it's fine. They figured it out. Like, congrats to the NFL for working through that one. But every week that goes by, that gets harder. So we talked last week about how they canceled the Pro Bowl. that gives them one extra week that they can add to the end of the regular season without changing the Super Bowl. It was revealed on, I'm not properly sourcing this because I can't remember, I should have written it down, but it was talked about this week, I saw it on ProFootballTalk.com, whatever it was, that the NFL is prepared to go as far as 4 weeks back on moving the Super Bowl. It's February 7th here in Tampa. They are willing to play it as late as March 7th. Now, that is very unlikely. That would mean they needed to add 5 weeks to the season because they could add one with the Pro Bowl not being played and not move the Super Bowl. Just have 1 week between the conference championships and the Super Bowl. And then they could add four more and keep moving the Super Bowl back. So I don't think they're going to need 5 weeks unless something really, really bad happens. But they are prepared to do that if they have to. This game in particular, the Raiders don't have any more bye weeks. There's no other way around it. We either play Sunday, Monday, or Tuesday, or this one goes all the way to week 18. So like I said, just coming out before I started recording, no new positives in the latest round of testing for the Raiders. That does not mean they couldn't have, you know, sometimes this thing doesn't show up on a test for a few days. They could have positives tomorrow or even Sunday morning or whatever it is. Whatever they got, you know, we're not out of the woods yet is my point. As far as the Bucs go, they play on Monday night next week, so moving this game back a day or two wouldn't hurt as much because the Bucs' week would still be almost a full week. If they played on Monday, they'd still have a full 7 days to their next game against the Giants next Monday night and all that stuff. So now you look at the matchup, the Raiders are a team, they come into the game 3-2, they come off a bye week, and before that they come off of a win at Arrowhead Stadium against the Chiefs, which surprised everybody. And I didn't think that, you know, the Chiefs were just going to cruise through their schedule and blow everybody out as the defending Super Bowl champion. But I also didn't think they'd lose that game to the Raiders, which they did, 40-32. And it was actually not even that close as the Chiefs got a late score there. But, you know, Derek Carr has been a lot better. Basically, he's been a lot better than he has been. I mean, you can say, oh, well, he's shutting up the haters and proving everybody wrong. Well, no. I mean, he wasn't. You know, he was just another guy. He was a Jag. And this year he has definitely upped things. 11 touchdowns, one interception. He's gone 70-plus percent on his completion percentage in every single game so far this year. And if you look at what the Bucs like to do, just as a matchup thing, it'll be interesting to see because the Buccaneers blitz a lot. Todd Bowles and that defense, they're coming. Second most blitzing team in the NFL right now through the six games. And they're the second best at it as far as passer rating allowed against the blitz. So there's a reason they blitz as much as they do. It has been working. On the other side, you've got Derek Carr. He's the number three rated quarterback this season against the blitz. And that's just this season. If you go back to the beginning of 2019, of all passers who qualify with at least X amount of attempts against the blitz, he is the best overall passer against the blitz. Well, not the blintz, because nobody can beat those things, especially when you fill them with cheese. But the blitz itself, he is number one overall going back to the beginning of 2019. So, should be interesting to see how much the Bucs try to go to it. On one hand, it's a strength of theirs. On the other hand, it's a strength of the other guy as well. Darren Waller, their tight end, has been huge. You've got the John Gruden. The whole angle here is the Bucs are facing off against him for the first time since he was the Bucs head coach. New stadium. Bucs will make their first ever appearance in the state of Nevada. And their first ever appearance at Allegiant Stadium, which... we just got one of those, it's not a Roomba, but it's like that. But it's the black one. I can't remember the name of it. A Shark, that's what it is. We got one of those Shark vacuums a few months ago. And it's a dead ringer for that stadium, man. That just big, thick, you know, hockey puck type looking thing. I mean, if you threw Allegiant Stadium, I think some people on Twitter, if you Google it, have done that, where you put the Allegiant Stadium logo on your black Shark vacuum, and it basically looks like the stadium rolling around. But it'll be cool. I've seen a couple games there that were televised before. Looking forward to seeing the Bucs play in it. And hopefully, like the stadium over at Mile High in Denver, where the Bucs got their first win, not in Denver, but at that stadium this year, hopefully they can do that in Las Vegas this weekend. And congrats to everybody that's in the media covering that game heading out to Las Vegas. Should be a lot of fun, although obviously not the same as in a normal year. So, looking at the numbers for that matchup, I told you about the Bucs DVOA. They are number one in the entire league. Offensively, they're number seven. And break that down into number nine passing offense and the number six rushing offense. So hats off to the offensive line and Ronald Jones. Defensively, Bucks are number one, including number one against the pass and number three against the rush. Special teams, they're number 17. Vegas, on the other hand, number 21 overall in DVOA. Their offense has been solid. Like I said, Derek Carr has been really good. They're the number five passing DVOA, only 24th rushing, but still number six overall. The rushing's not that big of a deal. Defensively, and this is where the Bucks need to make their bones on Sunday afternoon as of now. This is the 31st, second-to-last defense in the NFL through six games, 26th against the pass, 31st against the rush. They have allowed 30 points or more in four of their five games, and so it's a work in progress over there with the defense. And, you know, coming off that big win against Green Bay, the Bucs offense played well. I mean, they didn't play poorly, but the defense was so good, including producing points. You know, two touchdowns basically were off the defense. So if you look at it that way, I mean, the Bucs offense still had a good day. The Bucs offense still capitalized on Green Bay mistakes and took advantage of what their defense gave them. But I don't think we've truly seen the Bucs offense break out yet. Like, we haven't seen that yet. So this could be a good opportunity for that. And, you know, hopefully there's not as much regression coming off a huge win like that and the letdown effect. I think going on the road to a new place, and I think playing a team you don't play very often, you know, I don't know how much those are factors. I don't think they're much of a factor. But, you know, this division, looking around the division, and you saw Carolina struggle with Chicago over the weekend, albeit so did the Bucks, and the Saints are just kind of, you know, I'm not writing them off yet. The Falcons I am writing off. But the Bucks are now what you would call a favorite. I don't know about a prohibitive favorite, but they're a favorite to win this division. And at 4-2, even though that's a good record, they actually are probably better than, I mean, they should be 5-1, right? I mean, the Saints game, okay. They should have won the Bears game. And they're actually even a little bit better than it seems like their record indicates, even at 4-2. Here's a chance for the Bucks to string together some games. If you can get this win against a pretty decent Vegas team, you've got a bad Giants team next Monday night, and then you've got a big home Sunday nighter with a chance to amend what happened in Week 1 against the Saints. So it's a part of the schedule that's one, both very interesting because of what, you know, just the nature of the primetime games and things like that, and two, it's like kind of like moving day. You know, talk about Saturday and golf tournaments is moving day, and Sunday's when you win it, but Saturday's when you get yourself in position. You know, they're basically halfway to the bye. They've played six games at 4-2. They've got six more games. And if you look at the way the schedule breaks down, I'm not going to start going into wins and losses for each game. We don't do that before the season. We're not going to do it now. But the last four games after the bye, Minnesota at home, at Atlanta, at Detroit, and Atlanta again. So you should be able to eat there. I mean, you got four games at the end, none of which are going to be against likely playoff teams. You can chow a little bit. What do you do with these next six games? Like, if you can go 4-2 to match the 4-2 you just did and be 8-4 going into the bye with four games to go, the Bucks have a really good chance to win 11 or maybe even 12 games. You know, if you go 3-3 or worse in these next six, then it gets a little trickier. You know, I like their chances in this division against the other two teams, but, you know, these next six games are going to tell it. I mean, this is the meat of it right here, you know, with prime time and good opponents, and some. This is a chance for the Bucks to really make their move. So, looking forward to the game on Sunday. Like I said, it won't conflict with the Rays game now Sunday night. And let me say something about the Rays real quick. I know this show's on Joe Bucks Fan, but I'm a Tampa sports person, and I like to think of this as a Tampa sports show. It's obviously a huge emphasis on the Bucks being on Joe Bucks Fan, but we'll always talk Rays and Lightning here. So let me just talk about something real quick, and it relates to the Bucks anyway. So, like I always tell you, especially if you're from here or if you've lived here a long time, you're used to it. We are not a place that anybody else cares about. Specifically Tampa, both that and the entire state of Florida. You hear the rest of the nation just write the state of Florida off all the time. They think we're a bunch of crazy people. They think the whole place is filled with lunatics. And, you know, that's fine. I don't care about that. My point is, like, being from here and having lived here my whole life, like, that's the way it is. We're used to it. So watching this World Series before it started, you know, here's a Dodgers team that was, and not just this year, but over the past several years, has been the best in baseball. And yet, keeps coming up just short. They've been to two World Series in the past 3 years before this year and lost them both. They've always got the best record in the regular season. And then last year they lose to the Nationals, the eventual World Series champion. So, like, they've lost to the eventual World Series champion 3 years in a row. Everybody thinks they're the best. It's always an upset when they lose. And now here they are in the World Series again, only this time the opponent isn't some classic opponent like the Red Sox or another heavily stacked high payroll team like the Astros. No, it's little old turd squat Tampa Bay that no one cares about. So what's the narrative? Or what was the narrative before the series started 2 games ago? Coronation, right? This is a week and a half or maybe even week long coronation of a team that's been close, that everybody knows is the rightful best team that should be the champion. And the Rays are just opponent, quote unquote. There's nothing else about them. You know, nobody cares. They're just a team that happens to be there. And that's the way it is. Bill Plachke wrote an article. He's an LA columnist after the first game about how this series is already over after 1 game. It's a joke. There's not even any reason to worry about it. It's all a formality. So then here comes game two. The Rays come back and, you know, win game two. And now it's 1-1. Same guy like 2 days later. It's amazing how absolutely flip-floppy all these columnists can be. And they say something that they think 2 days later no one's going to remember because they'll say something different 2 days later. So he writes another column on the second day about how, oh, this one has the familiar feeling of a Dodgers choke and you can see all the signs. Like, he just 2 days ago wrote that there was no point in even playing the remaining 5 or 6 games. And now the Rays win a game and all of a sudden it's the other way around. It's a series. I mean, both teams are going to win games almost, you know, 80% of the time. And I have no idea what's going to happen the rest of the series. I'm not predicting a Dodgers win or a Rays win. But my only point is, it's never about us. It's always about the other guys. And now that the Rays have won a game, you know what the narrative is now? You'd think, oh, plucky underdog. People love underdog stories. No, now the Rays are bad for baseball. And their low payroll is actually like rooting for the house in blackjack because their owner is miserly and keeps all the money away from deserving players and screws guys over with contracts under team control. And so now it's actually, I would never have thought this 10 years ago, it's en vogue now to be rooting for the guys with hundreds of million dollars in payroll. It's like a complete reversal of what would normally be a classic underdog story. Because normally, oh yeah, we love 16 seeds or 15 seeds in the NCAA tournament. We love underdogs. We love upsets. No, now the Rays are the ones who are like rooting for the house in blackjack. And it's actually cool to have a $250 million payroll because that's doing things the right way. And let me tell you something. I know it sounds like I complain about this stuff, but I would not want it any other way. I love the way the national media barely pays attention to Tampa Bay. I love the way the utter disdain and contempt and the way they look down their noses. I love that. It wouldn't be nearly as much fun if we were a team. I would never want to be a fan of someone like the Yankees or the Dodgers or any big city, big money. That, to me, is like rooting for the house in blackjack. I love our teams who get no respect, or actually not even a lack of respect so much as a lack of attention. And every once in a while when they do crop up on the national stage like they're doing right now, it's full-scale revolt by these national media guys. They literally can't believe like Tampa Bay teams are doing well. We're just supposed to be an afterthought. Just double bird flip to every single one of them. And like I said, I have no idea what's going to happen the rest of the series. The Dodgers are still definitely a favorite. But to have the Lightning win the Stanley Cup, and the potential for the Rays to do this, never mind what the Bucks may or may not do, and who knows what that's going to be. I mean, savor it all, folks. Just let the hate flow through you, and just, I mean, right, you know that scene in Indecent Proposal with Demi Moore and Woody Harrelson and Robert Redford where, like, she's rolling around naked in the mattress full of, like, $100 bills? Like, that's how I feel about the national media hate. Just, I mean, keep it coming. It's so much more fun this way. Absolutely no complaints. I want my team to win because I want my team to win, regardless of anything else. But just that little extra bit of fun that it would be to see the hysteria of the Rays possibly taking this series, you know, 5, 6, 7 games and having a chance to win it, that alone would be worth it. So let's hope all that happens. You'll get the chance to watch it on Sunday night because, again, there's no conflict now with the Bucks game at 4:05. We will talk next week, whatever it is, about whatever happens. Hopefully the game gets played on Sunday afternoon. No muss, no fuss, and this is just a minor blip on the overall radar that is the 2020 NFL season. So enjoy it, whatever you're going to be doing. As always, I want to thank our good friends at Bill Curry Ford for sponsoring the show. I want to thank Joe Bucks Fan and the Joes for allowing me this platform to get in front of you guys. It is always a privilege to be on the single best place anywhere in media, not just the internet, but anywhere in media for Bucks coverage. And to be able to be on this show every week, especially during a season like this one. This is the first season the Bucks have actually been decent while I've been doing this show for as long as it's been. So that's cool so far. And let's hope that keeps going. Thanks to all of you out there for listening. Have a great weekend. Let's go Bucks. Let's go Rays. Let's go everybody. Let's get the doubleheader. Let's keep the Tampa Bay sports train rolling. But wherever you are and whatever you're going to do, be safe and have fun. And I will talk to you next week on the other side. In the meantime, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.